Introducing Elvis Presley.
Built around the fiery personality of Elvis Presley.
Here is an Elvis Presley you've never seen before.
It's Elvis on a love campaign.
It's Elvis, Hawaiian style.
And Elvis takes both sides.
Elvis rocking and socking on the waterfront.
Elvis brings you the vacation of your life.
A different kind of man, Elvis Presley.
It's a new Elvis, one you've never seen before.
Viva Elvis, Viva and Margaret.
Now he crowns his meteoric rise to fame with a fiery burst of dramatic power.
Hey everybody, and welcome to the Starring Elvis Presley podcast. I'm Libby.
And I'm Sheena.
And we just got through watching King Creole.
Yes.
So this was Elvis's longest movie.
It was his longest movie. I looked at all of the different movies and all of their run times, and this is the longest at just under 2 hours, which there's another one that's almost as long, but this one is the longest. So if you want to get more Elvis for your buck,
yeah.
Watch this one.
There's a lot to fit in this movie, though.
There's a lot. There's a lot going on.
There's so much going on. I mean, you need every minute of those 115 minutes, and you get a whole lot of Elvis.
You get a whole lot of Elvis. We always like to sort of notice how long you have to wait before you see him.
Yes.
And it was pretty...
It was 3 minutes.
3 minutes.
He starts in a song.
Yeah, I loved that. I love how that just seems so sort of... I don't know, laid back and cool, and I'm like, I want to go down to New Orleans and start singing that and see if someone will sing back to me.
Yeah. We had brought in our own little pot of gumbo for this. Preparing. We have some gumbo, some not crawfish etouffee, some not that fancy.
No, but some red beans and rice.
Yeah, would have loved if you had brought in some bread pudding. But, the queen of desserts, that's what Sheena is.
No, I have s'mores. Cracker candies.
Right, so, which is delicious anyway. from our office holiday party. But we're talking about food, and now we'll never get focused back on Elvis, because food is the only thing that can distract me from Elvis.
Well, I mean, it's New Orleans. I mean, to
that's
me,
right.
I hate New Orleans, I think food. So, but yeah. And I mean, that's what he's singing about is crawfish. So.
That's right. Spoiler alert. And y'all, there are tons of spoilers in this podcast.
Yes.
So if you care about, if you have not watched King Creole and you care about the spoilers, then now you've been warned. Consider yourself warned.
At the same time, this movie was released July 2nd, 1958. So surely you've had time to see this movie.
Yeah, y'all get around to it. Come on. Come on. Speaking of years and numbers and statistics, have you got some statistics for this movie?
Just a little.
I'm
not
sure.
Nothing fancy. It was released July 2nd, 1958. It peaked at number 5 at the box office. It's Elvis's fourth movie. And you know what? Everyone loved this movie. Critics, fans, everybody loved
that's
it.
That's worth noting.
Yeah. I think you still hear that today. I think you hear fans, mention this as a favorite. At the time, Billboard wrote that Elvis Presley's new film shapes up as a box office winner. It's got plenty of action and characterization, and the star gives his best acting performance to date, which is, I think, pretty accurate. This is, I think, my favorite job I've seen.
Oh, me too. Elvis, I was going to say that. This is my favorite movie so far.
Yeah, he's done such a good job.
And this was right before he left for
the Army. Yeah, he got his draft notice. To report to the U.S. Army before production could begin. So he was granted special permission to make the already contracted film and defer reporting for 8 weeks until it was finished. And they did film this in New Orleans. Everything you see, that is New Orleans. It was weird because the whole time I was watching it, and I'm like, I think I know that bar. I think I know that club. Like, it all looks so familiar.
But you also, some of those parts, you're like, I've never seen it so empty. I guess movie magic there. They can put a few barricades up for Elvis when he comes down to New Orleans to film.
That's kind of the funny thing, too, is it was difficult to shoot in New Orleans because he drew so many fans. I mean, at this point in his career, he's still just white hot. I mean, everyone is just so enamored with him. And so getting in and out of his hotel room... at the Roosevelt there in New Orleans was actually difficult. The hotel was reserved for the cast with Pinkerton guards patrolling the halls.
Wow.
Strict orders were given that the elevators were not to stop on the 10th floor, which is his floor, I'm assuming there. yes, that floor.
That's a safe assumption.
One night after filming, Elvis and his entourage entered the elevator, and the operator said he couldn't go to that floor because Elvis Presley was staying there.
Oh, that is hilarious.
So, and Elvis, how do you not know Elvis?
That's so funny.
That's kind of funny. So, this is It was funny when I looked this up. I was just telling you this a while ago that I love sort of this roundup of this movie that I found, because it said it was a 19-year-old gets mixed up with some crooks and involved with two women. And I'm like, that's the movie.
Yeah, that's it.
That's, I mean, but there's also so much going on. There's so much drama in this movie.
So when we finished the 2 hours, it was like, man, I can't believe at the beginning of this, our main character was about to graduate high school, and now he has seen, like, 4 people die. He's killed one of them in self-defense.
Yeah.
I think this is the second Elvis movie where he's killed someone in self-defense.
And he's doing so much romancing. All these ladies.
Yeah, sticking up for the ladies.
Yes.
And Dolores Hart was in this.
Yes, and we just saw her in Loving You, and now we see her in this. She was so sweet and so pretty.
You know what? I was thinking about this before. And in Loving You, when we first saw Dolores Hart and Elvis, she had to compete with a seemingly more capable, worldly woman then, too.
And she kind of
She definitely did. So, before we get too involved in the Elvis love triangle, because, again, there is one. Or maybe not a triangle, there's just
it's
two different...
It's a triangle.
Yeah.
He's trying to choose between his two ladies, because... There are two ladies.
And they're very different.
And I get the impression, too, in this movie that Elvis woos the Dolores Hart character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's Nelly. Nellie. He's sort of sweet on her. But Carolyn Jones' character, she's wooing him a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, she has to convince him a little bit. Like,
she's a little needy.
A little needy.
Understandable. She's kind of been pushed around by the Maxie character, who is kind of like a mob boss.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a gangster. He kind of owns the whole town.
Yeah.
And has got her under his thumb and wants to get Elvis under his thumb.
Yeah.
Danny. There's a lot going on. When we begin, we learn that Danny Fisher, Elvis's character, is about to graduate high school. Thank goodness, because he got held back.
Right.
The year prior. And, man, there's a lot riding on him. His mom passed away in an accident. His dad's kind of fell off the wagon.
Right.
Has not been working for a long time. Mm-hmm. So he didn't fall behind in school because he wasn't trying, but because he was a student full time and working full time to support
right.
his family.
Yeah.
And so we see something else that came up again. Or no, he met Ronnie. So he met Ronnie in the bar that he works in, and it was sticking up for her because she was getting pushed around, late for school. Okay, you're not going to graduate again. Which, sidebar, I would never have graduated if you're late. Like, would never have been here.
And I sort of understood to some degree, because he shows up with an elder lady, maybe just a little older.
Perhaps a lady of the night.
Maybe. And he gives her a big old kiss right before he goes inside, and then fights a guy.
Yeah.
Who hasn't done that? I mean, that was my favorite thing to do before I went to school.
I was about to say,
kiss somebody.
I'm late. I'm gonna...
You know.
Yeah, that's right.
But
just
yeah,
have a
I
show
mean, they do.
Right
they tell him. They pull him in, and they're like, hey, you're not graduating tomorrow. And he's like... Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they're like, but don't worry.
For this.
Yeah, that's right. And they're like, don't worry, you can try again. And he's like, no, I'm through with this. I'm not going to take my senior year three times, which I can understand. That would be a tough, big pill to swallow. And so he says, I'm just going to work. You know, this guy offered me a job singing, so I'm going to take him up on it. And this guy just happens to be Maxie, his former boss's rival in town.
Exactly.
So he's a good guy. He wants to work for him. Eventually, his sister starts dating him. And then we fall into how Maxie's trying to get him in his under his payroll still.
Right, yeah. And there's a whole drama with Elvis's father, or Danny's father,
mm-hmm.
who has struggled to get a job for the last several years. He gets a good job, but... as he's carrying, you know, the night's money or mm-hmm. the day's money over to the bank at night, he gets jumped.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't know it's by some of Maxie's people, but it's mm-hmm. by some of Maxie's people. And then Maxie happens to sweep in and be like, oh, I'll pay for your dad's medical bills because he's laid up in the hospital now.
Yeah.
If you'll come back and work for me. And it's all this drama of who Elvis is going to perform for. And that's the thing, is Elvis is, shocker, a performer in this movie.
Yes, that's right.
But it's fun, though, because we get some really great performances.
Yeah, we do get a lot of really cool musical numbers. And we always love pointing out Scotty and Bill and DJ.
And the Jordanaires.
And the Jordanaires, it's so cool, that's right.
You're just like, oh, look, there's Scotty again.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so cool because they're always there. Like, you see Elvis performing, the guys are right behind him.
I always wonder if that's what other people were talking about in 58, yeah. 57, when yeah. this came out. If they're like, oh my gosh, did you see DJ Fontana in the back? Did
yeah,
you see Bill
no,
Black?
I don't know, but that would be cool.
Yeah, I'm curious. So if you know the answer, then let us know. but yeah, we were talking, there's so many alternate endings to this. I mean, I don't know if they actually made them or if they're out there somewhere, but I feel like there's so many different ways when I thought I knew what was going on. And I was like, okay, so he's going to... so he knows that Maxie is going to pay for his dad's medical bills in the hospital. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's going to try to, he's going to come to him and say, no, I can't let you do that. Right. I'm going to pay you back. And then he says, no, your money's no good. You have to work for me. And then I'm like, I just know, I feel like I'm getting the hang of these Elvis movies.
Yeah.
Maybe not, but I thought, okay, someone's going to die. Like maybe Elvis is going to try to get rid of him and he's going to kill him accidentally. But kind of on purpose, or maybe Elvis is gonna die. Real glad that didn't happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, a long way away from what I thought would be the ending.
Yeah.
Another ending happened. So it was a really cool. There were several twists.
There were. I mean, I didn't really see. I just didn't really expect Ronnie to die there at the end.
No,
that broke my heart.
Oh, we should talk about Ronnie.
How everything she goes through in that movie, and you're sort of rooting for her there at the end, like you kinda,
you are,
you know. And she, and I was telling Libby too, I love those lines of Ronnie and Danny there and on the docks, just sort of being like, you know, love me and all of this.
Yeah,
it's so romantic.
Just take a
it's
day
like,
of your life and love me.
I know, what
Danny.
A great, what a great movie line. That's a fabulous movie line. But then she's dead.
She has so many good lines, and
she
even her dying line. What does she say? Yeah, she's like, so she gets shot. You see a little blood trickle out of her mouth. It's very dramatic.
Very dramatic.
Elvis is holding her, and she says, "It was a great day while it lasted, or it was a lovely day when it lasted."
Yeah,
and it's like,
no, like,
Ronnie.
No.
She had a lot of. This is our artsy fartsy podcast. Just in case you guys know, 2 hours worth of movie talk. We're going to give you our best liberal arts education talk. So, but yeah, so she had a lot of, I don't know if it's film noir. I feel like that's a very specific term and I could be misusing it, but it kind of makes me feel like the vibe that I get from Casablanca.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that, too, because Michael Curtis, who directed this film, directed Casablanca.
Oh, that's
he
right.
He directed 166 movies, which let's deal with that for a second.
Tired.
From, like, 19...
I would be...
From, like, 1912 to, like, 1960-something.
Wow.
Kind of crazy. But that's one thing I love, too, about this movie was I love Casablanca. I've seen it umpteen hundred times. And so much of what I love about that movie is sort of the... Just how the shadows sort of tell a story
shadows,
along with the actors.
I'm telling y'all, we're going to get artsy fartsy. We're talking about shadows, rule of thirds, cameras.
I know, and that happened in this movie, too. There's that really beautiful shot of Elvis performing, and you see his shadow behind him, and it's so pretty.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
and at first,
for Elvis to be so beautiful, and then have the shot be so beautiful, you're just like, oh, okay, I'm here for this.
Yeah, because it's an abnormally wide shot for just his shoulders up.
Yeah.
You would think, why is that not a tighter shot? But then you notice, or at least for me, maybe because I'm slower with this, but you notice, oh my gosh, those shadows look awesome. So maybe they're just trying to play into, this is his first performance. This is Danny Fisher's first performance. He's really trying to make it. So, yeah, there's really pretty, and it does give me that Casablanca, the smoke, and the black and white, and the shadows, and the
there's
lights.
So
there's lots
of
glitz and glamour, too.
A lot of that,
There's lots of juxtapositions between kind of the glitz and glamour of Maxie's apartment in New Orleans, what you would imagine would be the French Quarter. It's up a staircase of this Italianate or French looking balcony, and there's like lush greenery everywhere.
Oh yeah, it's so pretty.
There's velvet, you know, furniture, crystal decanters. It's very fancy. And then, but the first shot that you see Elvis in, he's singing about crawfish to this woman pulling a little cart on with a horse on the road.
I
so
know,
there's
yeah.
very different. You see both sides of the city.
Yeah, and it's really cool. It made me. It's been several years since I've been to New Orleans, so it made me miss the city. I was like, oh, I kind of want to go back. And
well, we should go because I've never been.
You should. What?
Uh huh. Mm-hmm.
I for several years I spent all of my Halloweens down there. Oh, so, man. Yeah, it's a crazy night to be.
Well, I bet. I
in
bet.
New Orleans is on Halloween. But, yeah, it's such a fun city. And so many good songs that, to me, sort of have that New Orleans feel. Like, you have Trouble,
oh, yes.
You have Hard Headed Woman, and, of course, King Creole.
Yeah.
I just felt like the music, again, felt very effortless. It felt mm-hmm. very natural to the film.
Yeah, the
Elvis
first time you see the...
fabulous job.
Yeah, and the first time you see the Jordanaires, Elvis is really jazzy. That tune makes me feel like it was really kind of a departure from the typical... Although we did hear... basically the same tune as Jailhouse Rock.
He's really similar to Jailhouse, yeah.
Yeah, or we were listening to it, and I was like, what is that? Where have I heard that before? That's Jailhouse. Yeah, so have we got some trivia?
We do have some trivia. All right. So this movie was based on a Harold Robbins novel called A Stone for Danny Fisher.
Oh.
And that book is about a New York boxer. Well, this is not about a New York boxer.
No.
So after they purchased the film rights, Hal Wallace changed the main character into a New Orleans singer, which
that's
I think it works.
A big change.
Very well.
But it does work very well.
Yeah, so you may want to read that book in case you decide you want
when
to
When did the
see.
Book come out? Do you know?
Probably before the movie. I don't know.
I'm like, is it a classic? Is it really old?
I'm focused on the movie here. Let me.
Sheena, you should know everything, all the facts about everything.
I'm sorry. Okay, the two working titles were Danny and Sing You Sinners.
Oh, yeah.
Which
I like
King Creole
way better. Yeah.
It works.
Sorry.
And I think I like the title, too, of King Creole, of a young man who's sort of navigating his way through New Orleans. It works.
Multiple levels.
Yeah, and we mentioned Dolores Hart earlier. She's the niece of singer Mario Lanza. She was the Elvis's leading lady for the second time, as we said. She would later leave acting and become a nun. Today she is a mother superior, but she's still a voting member of the Academy of Motion Pictures, which, how cool is that?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I bet very few people can be in both of those very exclusive clubs.
And we mentioned the character Ronnie. She's played by actress Carolyn Jones. And through the whole movie, I kept saying, how do I know her? How do I know her? She's Morticia from the Addams Family. That's how we know her.
That's hilarious.
And then, of course, Walter Matthau of The Odd Couple. He is... he's our bad guy. He's our villain.
Yep.
And so he's so much fun to watch. I just don't think of him very much as a bad guy, but I thought he did a really good job as Maxie.
Yeah.
And then speaking of another bad guy, we have Vic Morrow. He played Shark. And
oh, you dislike him. I'm not a big fan.
He would become sort of typecast in his career as a heavy, as they called him.
Hmm.
But he was killed in 1983 as a result of an accident on the set of The Twilight Zone. So very sad.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and we mentioned a while ago, Michael Curtis. You've seen, trust me, you have seen some of his movies at some point. If you haven't seen Casablanca, he's done a bunch of early Betty Davis movies, which I know I'm a big fan of, so I could list 10 of them, but we won't go to that many. He also did Yankee Doodle Dandy, Mildred Pierce, White Christmas, Angels with Dirty Faces. I mean,
wow.
Oh, my God. I didn't realize until I Googled it. I mean, I knew he did a lot, but I didn't know he did that many. It was really cool to learn. So, that's my trivia.
That's your trivia.
And speaking of Elvis's co-stars, we were just talking about them. We actually have an interview with one of them, Jan Shepherd. She played Mimi, Danny's sister.
Yeah.
And so we just have an interview with her talking about what it was like to work with Elvis, what she thought about his career. So have a listen.
Well, Elvis didn't act. That's the whole thing. He was so natural. He was very simple, and no mannerisms, you know. As a matter of fact, I read an article about Michael Curtiz. This was years ago. And Curtiz said he thought Elvis was going to be a very conceited boy. And when he started working with him, he said, no, this is a lovely boy. And he's a wonderful actor. And he's going to be a great actor. Curtiz was very excited about working with him. After they started working, he didn't want Elvis. This was primarily a picture that was bought for Jimmy Dean. And Hal Wallace had signed Elvis to do this picture and told Curtiz he'd like to have him do it, Curtiz went to a theater and saw Elvis and said, no, no, I'm not going to do it. And finally, Hal Wallace said, look, this kid, you know, the teenagers love him, but he wants other people to have a great deal of respect for him. So he said, I want you to work with him and make him the actor that he wants to be. And that's what happened. And I know that Curtiz had said on the set one time, I overheard him, he says, I didn't want you, but I'm sure glad that you did the picture. He really liked him. Of course, Elvis didn't understand him half the time. Curtiz had a very thick accent. I mean, he'd been in this country for about 45 years, but he still had this very thick accent, which Charlie O'Curran, who was a dance director and a wonderful guy, would always have to translate to Elvis what Curtiz was saying, and it was very cute, the back-and-forth thing. Charlie was wonderful. He made Elvis laugh. He made Elvis really relax, and he did a lot of his, all his music, as a matter of fact. I think that everybody on the set was amazed at how good Elvis was. I remember even Dean Jagger, after a scene where he and Elvis have this confrontation, that after it was over, you know, Dean Jagger had those real sparkly eyes, and his eyes just started to sparkle, and he went over and patted him on the back. And I think he was very impressed. I think Walter Matthau was too. We all were. We all were. He was terrific in that picture. When Walter first came on the set, as a matter of fact, I think it was one of the most difficult scenes when he is really very aggressive toward Elvis and was kind of overacting. And so Curtiz took him aside and said, Mr. Matthau, he says, I know you're a big actor and you make big money, in his accent, of course, but try not to act like you make such big money and you're not such a big actor. And he was telling him to be simple, of course, which Elvis had without even working at it. Elvis had that simplicity. I think that Elvis really wanted this to be his ultimate goal, is to be a great actor. He took the very seriously his role. And he lost sleep over it. He would take his script to bed with him, and he would come in and was very concentrated, very focused on playing Danny, and I think Danny was very close to him. I think there was that, the family, the fact that there was the family relationship, the father and the sister, and then the rebel, and wanting to be somebody, but kind of fighting against people who didn't want him to be what he wanted to be. And I think that went over into his private life. I think Danny was an outlet for him. I think he related to his own family when the character of the father was dying. And we went through that for about 8 hours. And Mr. Curtiz was very pleased that all of us could cry for about 8 hours solid. It was raining that day, too, I remember. I don't think he had any shortcomings as an actor at all. I think he was so simple. He was great timing. And that came from his music. But he had a naturalism about him. And he never seemed to have to push. It was a very much a part of his nature, his own nature. And I think that given the chance, when I think that I heard this, now I don't know if this is true, but I heard that he turned down West Side Story and A Star Is Born. And I think that would have just put him over the top as an actor. I think Elvis had the makings of a great actor. One of my very favorite scenes of that picture was when Walter Matthau was setting Elvis up with Carolyn and had him come to the apartment. And the dialogue was so crisp, you know, the back and forth dialogue. And he was just so good with her, just marvelous. And that was my favorite scene. It was kind of a seduction scene. And I think it was a pull for the seduction toward Carolyn, but yet he knew he had to stay out. He was very good. He was very good in that. They were both wonderful in that scene. Carolyn and Elvis were just wonderful. The scenes that we did at the very beginning of the film, which was the, I always say it's the crawfish where he's singing to the woman on the street who's selling fish. And then we're in the kitchen and he's getting ready to go to school. That just kind of flowed so nicely. He did wonderful little things like pulling my apron strings and just touching me and just doing, yes, that was one of my favorite scenes. I don't think that Elvis had to think too hard about anything he did. I think if you asked Elvis after a scene, what did you do, he wouldn't be able to tell you, because it came very naturally to him. He was a toucher to begin with. He was a hugger, and he wasn't afraid to relate to a woman or a man. He was very natural. You didn't have to talk to Elvis to understand that acting meant a great deal to him. He didn't have to explain that to you. You knew when you worked with him that he was tremendously focused on what he was doing. He was really into his character, and it meant a lot to him. I remember hearing him going up to Mr. Curtiz and said something to the effect that, for the first time, I know what a director is. And Curtiz was really pleased about that. But no matter what Curtiz would ask of Elvis, Elvis would say, okay, you're the boss. As a matter of fact, I think he made Elvis lose some weight and shave his sideburns off for the film. And Elvis says, okay, that's what you want. So he was really, when he went into a part, he went into it the way that he knew it was the right thing to do. Well, Elvis would like to sit with his guitar and sing. And naturally, there would be a little crowd that would gather around him when he would do this. When we worked alone for a couple of weeks at the beginning of the film, he used to do this quite a bit. He'd come in my dressing room with his guitar, and he'd sing. And he would sing Danny Boy, which I loved. And he did it so well that it would bring tears to me. And I said, why don't you record this? It's so wonderful. And he said, they won't buy it. No one will buy it. Which I thought was a pity, because he did so well with it. But he, at a birthday party that I had, he gave me a big tiger, because he knows I love cats. And we named him Danny Boy. At the day, right there at the birthday party, he said, that's Danny Boy. I said, okay. Dolores Hart sneaked around and had a surprise birthday party for me. She called me up and said, come on over. And I always did. And I ran over there, and of course everybody was there from the set, Lillian Montevecchi and Ty Hart, the kids from Paramount. And Elvis walked in, which I was really shocked about. He walked in with this big tiger on his shoulders. And he had a gift, and I took the gift, thanked him, and put it aside because I didn't want to open anything. He said, no, open that now. And I said, well, no, I'll open it later. No, now. So when I opened it, it was a movie camera with a light bar. And I'd never handled a movie camera. And he said, take your pictures now, because I used to ask him pictures for the kids in the neighborhood. They want photographs, Elvis. So he said, now take your pictures, which I did. And, oh, that film is so precious to me now. I wish I had gone out and ran out and gotten 10 rolls of film that night. There's only about 2 rolls of film in there. But, oh, it was wonderful. I think he was very impressed with the big actors at the studio at the time, like Marlon Brando and Sophia Loren and Tony Quinn and all those people were at the studio. As a matter of fact, one time we were in the commissary having lunch, and Sophia and Carlo Ponte were sitting behind us. Elvis was facing me, and as we were having our lunch, Marlon Brando came in with a party and sat directly behind Elvis. And I told Elvis, I said, Marlon Brando's sitting behind you. And I said, why don't you, you know, like when you get up, kind of bump into his chair, you know, and talk to him, and he'll talk with you. And he said, no, looked in his bacon sandwich and said, no, I can't do that. And meanwhile, Cornell Wilde came over with the menu and asked if he would sign an autograph for his daughter. And Elvis was like Cornell Wilde, you know, and he was signing his autograph. And as he left, he said, can you believe that Cornell Wilde wanted my autograph? And so as we started to get up to go, of course, Brando was kind of taking little peeks over his shoulder at Elvis, too. And as we started to go, he bumped into Brando, and Brando got up, of course, and then they shook hands and talked. And it was sweet. And then going back, he says, oh, Marlon Brando. I was so excited.
Well, that was a great interview. That's
yes.
Jan Shepherd, who played Mimi, Elvis's character's sister.
Yeah, and if you enjoy hearing sort of these behind-the-scenes stories about Elvis and his movies, you will want to come here to Graceland. We have a VIP exhibit called Elvis in Hollywood, from Teen Idol to Leading Man.
It's very cool. Chock full of scripts,
yeah.
Costumes, awards.
Yes, and if you want to see it, hurry. It closes in March.
Yeah, that's so around the corner here at Elvis. Time moves fast at Graceland in Memphis. That's right. Yeah, so come to Graceland and check it out. You know, we mentioned that King Creole was his last film before he joined the Army.
Yes.
So right when he came back to join the Army, he filmed G.I. Blues.
And that's
or
our
from
next movie.
After joining the Army. Yes.
That's our next movie. So
make sure you watch it so you can listen along with us and we don't spoil anything for you. So yeah, join us for G.I. Blues next week, and thanks for tuning in to this edition of Starring Elvis Presley.
Thanks.
Bye. Thank you.